Committed is a production of iHeartRadio.
How far would you go for love? Like, literally, how far would you travel? Would you cross mountains, borders, entire continents? Today's love story is about one man who bicycled thousands of miles across foreign lands just to be reunited with the woman he loved. A woman he'd only been with in person for a few months. The year was 1975. Charlotte, a young Swedish tourist, had just driven 22 days along what used to be called the Hippie Trail from Sweden to New Delhi, India. She was searching for a different kind of adventure. It was dusk, the sun was setting, and Charlotte, who's called Lotta by her friends, strolled into one of the city's shopping centers. When she was there, she spied a handsome young man sketching portraits on the street for cash.
And she met me, and I was written on a board, 10 minutes and 10 minutes portrait and 10 rupees, you know.
So when he was sitting there making portraits, it was like a magnet, you know. I was just drawn there. And one thought I had, that my mom always said that, please, you I love to have some sketches of me and my two sisters. And that was the opportunity. I'll go there and have my portrait made and send it to my mom on her 27th December birthday.
So she came, she wanted to have the portrait done. I used to be a little gathering around me when I was doing portraits, I remember. But I saw the blonde and long blonde hair, blue eyes, and, you know, so I was a bit scared. Maybe I cannot do properly. I was a little afraid, actually. But anyway, I did the portrait and shaky hand and there.
And I was not really satisfied. It was...
So she came back next evening. She came back. And I was more afraid because I thought now she had found some mistakes in the sketch. No, she wanted to have another one. So I did the second one. But interesting thing, I had written 10 rupees. She gave me 20 rupees.
Oh.
So I felt sorry for this tourist, blonde tourist. I felt, oh, she can't count the money. And it will... See, I returned the 10 rupees. I said, 10 rupees I'll take. I put in on 10 rupees return. And she said, no, no, you need it. You keep it. She said, put it. And then I said, oh, that is how they do it. And appreciate my drawing, I felt, you know. That is how we met.
A lot of people we talk to on this podcast believe their love story was destined to be. And PK is no exception. He says that in that moment, he just knew. He knew that he was going to spend the rest of his life with this beautiful blonde woman from another continent. It didn't matter that in India he was from the lowest caste, that he was considered an untouchable. It didn't matter that he hadn't finished school yet and that he had no money. It was just destined that he would be with Lotta.
And then I remember that my parents had done a horoscope at the time that I'm a Capricorn.
If you couldn't hear him, PK said that he was shaky. He felt completely weightless and almost like this was an out-of-body experience. And for some reason, he thought back to when his parents had done a horoscope for him. Now, it's pretty common for Indian parents to do a horoscope for their child when they're born, and it often helps them figure out how to arrange certain things in their lives, sometimes even a marriage. But they didn't see an arranged marriage for PK. Instead, the stars foretold that PK would meet an exotic woman from a faraway land, that she would be a Sagittarius, and that she would own a jungle.
She's a Taurus. So third meeting, I asked her if she was born in May, and Juraiksha in Taurus. And she was very surprised. Her eyes became big, I remember.
But did she own a jungle?
I said, jungle, and she said, you mean forest? Yes, yes, in India we call jungle, I said, it's a square. And I'm a forest owner, she said. But how did you know, she asked me. And she plays musician, yes. So I said, you play some flute or something like that? My dad used to play flute. Yes, yes, but how did you know all these things? then I could not speak properly English at that time, but I was showing that my hand was moving towards the sky. I said, it is decided in the heaven and we are destined to meet. And I'm a Capricorn, you are a Taurus, I said like that. And I have been told from my childhood about you that I will meet in my life. And then she asked me, what is more decided in the heaven? And suddenly, I was very shy, I remember. But some other voice, I felt it was not me, because I never spoke to any girl at the time in Indian 70s, you know, and only my mother, sister, I used to speak.
Yep, you heard that one right. PK had never really spoken to a woman outside his family for this long before. And once he got talking, he couldn't stop. He started to tell Lada his entire horoscope, and then he just blurted out that they were destined to be together, that it was already decided by the universe.
When she asked what is decided, I said, but it was some other voice, actually. So you will be my wife, I said. And then she was staring at me, and I got frightened. I remember I said, now she will call to the police. I will lose my permission to do portraits for the tourists. That was my reaction.
PK looked away. He was scared, terrified, actually. And when he looked back at Lada's face, she was not smiling.
But she said, what did you say? She said, I remember clearly. Then I told her, the same voice came out. You will be my wife. You cannot change and I cannot change. We are destined to meet. It is decided in the heaven. That was, I said, shortly. And then I kept quiet.
Can you imagine? He said, you will be my wife. You cannot change and I cannot change. And we are destined to meet. It is decided in heaven. Ah! It's amazing. I'm Joe Piazza, and this is Committed. This episode is the final episode of season 7. It's crazy, right? I chose to end the season with Lada and PK's story because I just found it so damn hopeful. It's a story about love triumphing over all of the odds, over language barriers, cultural barriers, class barriers. It is about stopping at nothing to be with your person. And I love that, especially going into a brand new year. I love hearing about how PK stopped at absolutely nothing to be with Lada. But let's back up a second. We heard a little bit of it in the intro, but I wanted to know more about how Lada ended up in India in the first place. She grew up in Sweden in the early 70s, and then she went to London to work in a hospital.
I met some friends there, and we decided to buy a Volkswagen van and travel to India. And that was in October 1975. So, you know, the longing to go to India, but not, I can't say that I want to just go and find an Indian man. That was not the intention. I was quite an adventurous girl and wanted to be free and experience and know about other cultures, way of living. That attracted me so much.
But then she saw PK sitting there and sketching his portraits.
I had some very strong attraction and felt very warm and connecting feeling with PK directly.
Yeah, but one thing I remember, you thought, you said you mixed up with Jimi Hendrix.
Yes, you looked the style of Jimi Hendrix.
But I didn't know who was Jimi Hendrix. I didn't know in India. You said you looked like Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm looking at old pictures of you. You do kind of look like Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, totally.
<I didn't know.
laughs> Yes.
So Lada feels this connection too. Maybe not to marry him right away, but a connection. And a few days later, they got on a train to go visit PK's home village in Orissa in eastern India.
And it took 3 days about slow, and the train was very dirty, I remember. And the people had goats and chickens in the streets. I remember that. And we traveled 3 days and three nights. We couldn't speak anything, but we traveled by the train, locomotive, that cold. You know, I was afraid of windows were not glass. It was only rods, you know, the iron rod. And the smoke was coming inside, and the burning coals were coming inside. I thought her hair will burn down. So I was, my back was, I was trying to stop this. I remember very much. I was, and you were sleeping, and I was watching you when you were sleeping there. I took to the east coast of Orissa.
So they had this train trip where PK felt like he was just trying to protect Lada all the time. They get off the train and they went to this temple that PK loves. It's called the Sun Temple. And he thought Lada was going to like it because he knew she was an art lover and they had these stone carvings from the Middle Ages. So they get to the temple and PK tells her to close her eyes. He holds her hand and he stands her in front of this beautiful ornate carved wheel.
12 wheels, yes. 12 wheels like this. This was more than 2 meters, 2-3 meters height. And she was standing there. I said, open your eyes. I was standing backside of her. And she opened and looked and looked and looked quite a few minutes. I mean, so I said, why is she looking, not speaking anything? Then I was asking her, did you like it, this stuff? And she went straight to me, turned towards me. I saw her eyes. She was crying. And I felt very... I said, oh my God, I hurt her feeling somewhere. So I said, sorry, I please forgive me. I didn't want you to be sad and I want you to be happy, I said. And there, actually, she gave me a kiss. No one kissed me in India, I mean, except my mom. And she kissed me here.
I'm going to interrupt for a quick second here because I want to explain why Lada erupted with such passionate joy at the sight of this wheel sculpture in the Sun Temple. See, it's yet another coincidence in this love story, in a love story filled with coincidences. Years earlier, Lada had been given a calendar with 12 pictures from India. One of them had a stone wheel that was set in a temple. She liked it. She just liked it. She liked something about it, and it caught her attention, and she put that particular picture on her wall. She had absolutely no idea where exactly it was from in India, what temple it was in, but... wait for it. It was this wheel. This particular wheel that she's staring at with PK is the same one she had on her wall back in Europe. So she's blown away. She's amazed. She doesn't have words to explain how amazed she is. What does she do? She just kisses this man. She gives him a big old kiss right there, right on the spot. And PK, who had never really even talked to a woman, much less touched a woman, much less kissed a woman, has no idea what to do.
Oh my God, in 70s, you know, it's still now that people in open public, they don't kiss, you know. When she kissed me, I was paralyzed of joy. And I said, oh my God, I'm not an untouchable, because, you know, my background, I'm outcast in India, you know, caste system.
Tell me a little bit, PK, about your caste, about being an untouchable and what that meant for you in Indian society.
Yeah, that is actually very painful, actually, the identity, the system that is more than, I don't know how many thousand years old that is. The moment I started school, I was not allowed to sit inside this roof classroom. And the very first, the teacher said, you sit there, and 5-6 meters from the other street, the children, outside, there was no roof. So it was... such a roof house, you know, no walls. That I remember the school first, and children were sitting on the floor, this urban floor directly. And the moment I was touching someone, they were getting angry and they were running to the river to wash themselves. I remember I used to be very sad, and one day I said, Mom, I'm not going to school because no one likes to play with me. So it is very, very painful. I will be very... sorry.
No worries.
And so no one touched me, not even my classmates, you know, in a primary school, I remember. Anyway, Then when she kissed me, I was so happy, and then I felt, oh my God, I'm not untouchable. I'm touchable. People can kiss me and touch me. I felt like higher than the sky, taller than the sky. I felt that feeling, you know. And you can't. Words are not accurate enough, Joanna. I mean, in English language, I cannot express in words my deeper feeling till now. You know, I hope you understand this.
I do. I love it. And Charlotte, why did you kiss him? What was it like to see those wheels that you had the picture of? Did you just think this is ordained by something else, by heaven, by the universe?
Yeah, I think that was just the answer of why I picked it up. And I got a few more things like that, synchronizing things that you experience something few years earlier, and then few years later you just experience it. So yeah. I just felt there must be something more, and I used to be quite logical, you know. But at this time I was just following my heart, and I think I fully did it. And reaction from friends and even our daughter, she said, "How did you dare to just go with one you don't know, you know, doing what you did?" But that was really, like you said, destiny.
Yeah. Because I never said to anyone like this. I spoke, you know, with daring nature. I was very shy of that, but still I could say that. I couldn't believe myself.
And the thing is that turning up in Odisha, it's called nowadays, that was like coming back home. And if thinking of that, you have an incarnation, you know, you have been living before rebirth, then I really feel that I lived there before, because nothing is not unnatural. I feel just part of it. The only thing, I can't speak the language because we didn't stay enough time there. But otherwise, I just feel so acquainted to this culture. And now I'm talking just about the real tribes, you know, living very far out in the jungle. I feel so close to this. I'm not a city person, but going out in the biggest home village and area, that is... Still, I feel such a joy in my heart.
And now at this point, Lotta is just like, yeah, I guess this is true. We are destined to be together, to be married. So she does the next right thing and goes to meet his family. PK's mom had passed away, but they ended up asking for his father's blessing.
And I just felt part of the family directly. But the first meeting with PK's father, he was a postmaster in a small village. And we came very late in the night.
Yeah.
And PK entered there. First.
And I said, you wait outside the veranda.
Yeah.
And I heard that my father was sending some telegraph. You know, in telegraph, he was doing, sending telegraph. And I said, Papa is still working this evening also. I said, and he was staying in the same building, and the backside of the building, and alone at that time. And then my father didn't know that I came from Delhi with my new wife, I can say. And I remember Lotta had jeans. Mm. And I said, wait outside. And I had no knowledge that Lotta had in her baggage Indian sari, silk sari, is an Indian sari, you know. Mm. I didn't know that. But I said, wait, let me talk to my father that you are with me. And then when he says, yes, then I will take you inside the room, I said. And I went inside the room and I bowed down like in a traditional way to my father on his feet. And Papa was very surprised that you don't have any holidays. How did you come? It takes so long time to tell. What happened? How did you come? Why? I said, Papa, I want to marry. With whom? Yes, I found the lady you have been talking since my childhood. And he got nervous, I remember, and he had bare, he had no dress outside, you know, he was the only, he was
lungi,
bare.
Lungi.
He had lungi only he had. And he said, oh, she's outside, and if you say yes, then I will bring her. And he got, let me have a shirt, he said, and he was searching his shirt to put it. And then he got so nervous, and one question he asked, is she a Taurus? in Odia, you know? Yes, Papa, she's a typical Taurus. I said, don't worry. And she was born in 12th of May, I said. Papa was very convinced. And yes, let her come. And when I came out of the room for the post office, and Lotta was on the veranda, she has changed the jeans to sari, silk sari. And she was dressed like Indian, what do you call, bridegroom. And I was surprised. I didn't tell her to do like that. But she did it. And that was the biggest surprise I felt, you know. And sari. And then she was so graciously, she was walking. And I didn't get time to introduce her or anything. She just bore down like one has to do to father-in-law, you know. I said, how my younger brother was saying, oh, she did perfectly than you, going down to Papa. And there she was accepted very quickly, you know.
And a lovely family. Yeah. This is missing them, actually.
Yeah. And so how long had you guys known each other at this point?
Yeah.
It was January.
Yeah, more than one week.
Yeah, more than 1 week.
Yeah. 2 weeks. Two weeks.
Yeah. Max, I mean, 2 weeks, that is, less than 2 weeks, actually, I must say.
The two of them were married in a traditional ceremony in PK's village right after that.
My father blessed me, did the rituals at home. And my brother, they were also together, they did rituals performance with own close relative. And that I called, I'm married, and my wife, I said, you know. But I had no paper. It was not accepted in the, you understand? So the moment she came home, the rituals were arranged in a tribal way. And then I called my wife and she, but it was maybe for her is different, but I felt now I'm married. My father said, you are married and she's your wife. My brother was very strongly, he was saying, in English, my brother was speaking English to her, to both of us. Now you are married, he said, in English, so Lotta could follow the rituals. And my second brother, who was in railway, a railway department, he said, follow her footsteps. He told me very, and you are very people can fickle-minded. And he said to me, I know you, Ponsai Lur, you change your mind, but now you have got your wife and you follow her footsteps. That's very strictly. So then we came back to Delhi by train.
And then I had to go back to Sweden.
Yep. They get married. They go back to Delhi. But Lotta couldn't stay. She had to go back to Sweden to finish school. And PK had one more year left in arts college in India.
Actually, I wrote a letter from Tabriz to my parents and told them that I actually already knew that when I arrived in Sweden. But my intention, that was to return to India in August the same year, 76. But my mom, she said, oh, you please finish your school and you get to know each other better.
Yeah.
And PK had more than 1 year left in his arts college. So that's why we did.
They both continued their studies, sent long letters back and forth, which to me sounds so romantic, but I don't know if it actually would be in reality. The truth is, their young relationship could have fizzled out right then. After all, they weren't legally married. Lotta could have chalked this up to some crazy Indian adventure, and they were thousands of miles apart. But that's not what happened. PK did find his way to Lotta in Sweden. Of course, he didn't fly there because neither of them could afford a plane ticket. So he bought a bike. We'll get to the next part of this adventure after a quick break. And Lotta and PK had this whirlwind-fated romance. I mean, it is the stuff of epic, epic romance movies. But after they got married in the traditional ceremony in PK's village, Lotta had to return home to Sweden to finish school. Once PK finally graduated from his own classes in Delhi, he wanted to join Lotta, but he couldn't afford the airfare.
some people just ask, why did I send him an air ticket? But, you know, as a student and having enough money to send to that, so PK, he was very clever, so he said, then I bicycle too.
That why I bicycled, that was only alternative I had, you know.
Yeah.
And after Lotta left, longing was too much. I felt in my body, physically I felt, you know, that I must live in it. And I tried to, the tickets was very high. Only Maharaja could fly, you know, at that time. But one thing is, I think, my strength, I think, now I'm doing self-realization, I think my strength was my lack of knowledge of geography, I feel. If I would have known how far it was, the Sweden, I was mixing up Sweden to Switzerland, I know. And you corrected many times, but I didn't learn anything. I said Switzerland, see, from Switzerland everywhere. And if I would have known, I don't think I would have dared to leave the country. Thank God I had no maps and I didn't know how far. The only thing I knew that she, Lotta, took 22 days to drive a car. So I was counting. If she took 22 days, then I'll be taking maybe 20 times, 30 times more. Like that I was calculating, you know. And direction was where sun is setting, that way I will bicycle.
PK bought a Raleigh woman's push bike. He bought the lady style because it was cheaper than the dude bike. He grabbed his passport, a windbreaker, a sleeping bag, and that's it. He just started pedaling. He barely had any money, and along the way, he'd sketch portraits of people in exchange for food, clothes, and shelter.
And so I like to do 10-minute portrait, and they give me bread, and, you know, in Iran, they didn't pay money for the sketch, but they used to give bread. I used to pack in the bicycle and eat, and, you know. That was a different, that was, it's fantastic. People guided me and fed me. And
I had a letter written to him that you please don't go alone. It's better that you go with someone. That was my advice.
But I was not alone. I was full of hippie friends.
But that is written in a letter to him. Yeah, so I actually knew that he was on his way.
Oh, yeah.
And we of course, wrote letters to each other to Posto Restante, to the main postal office in the big cities. Mm-hmm. So that was the way you could connect, because phoning was out of question.
And yeah.
Mobile wasn't there.
Well, I love that, because we don't think about how that used to work, but you knew what cities he would be going through.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
would just email a letter, or not email, email a letter. You would just mail a letter to that main post office and then assume he would pick it up.
Yeah. So I was going to the main post office, for example, Kabul. When I left India, I never told anything to my family. But when I reached Kabul, from Kabul, I wrote to my brother and father, you know. So when I went to Kabul Post Restante, then you show your passport. My name starts P, my family name starts M, and then they used to give big bag of thousands of letters with P, thousands of letters of M. That will take a half a day to go through all the letters. And I pick up my letters out of 1,000 letters and then show the passport, and then you get the letter. So I got letters from Kabul and Tabriz and Tehran and Herat and, you know, Istanbul and... So that is the communication. Maybe many letters may be still lying in some post-restaurant in some countries.
Might be in some museum as well.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? What do you remember what the hardest part of the journey was? What was the most difficult part?
It was painful also back my physical. I mean, back was very painful. I couldn't sit in the toilet properly, I remember. So I started using my willpower. And I realized and did mistake. I did many mistakes, my God. But I never give up. All the time I told myself, do it or die. I will meet Charlotte and have a fantastic family, or I will die here. And next life I will meet. That was my, you know, mantra.
That's a lot, though. That's heavy. You just either I get to Charlotte, and we have a wonderful family, or I'm just going to die here on the side of the road.
But next life, you might turn up.
Lotta told me that she didn't have the same doubts as PK. Even though the journey felt like some kind of test, she truly believed it was only a matter of time before he just showed up. And he kept trucking along, sketching portraits, sweet-talking border guards. He actually managed to get past the border guards into Pakistan by sketching their portraits. One day, when PK was in the desert of Afghanistan, he witnessed a German woman named Linnea get into a car accident.
And she was bleeding. I helped her, took her to Kabul hospital. I went back to Kabul. And Liane, her name was. And that girl got help in Kabul from an Austrian embassy also. So I was with her for a few days to help her. I remember the scene. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And the Afghan people, they're standing on the turban. They didn't like to touch. She was a woman, so they was afraid to touch her. And
PK did everything that he could to help Linnea. She had a really hard time talking to him because she'd lost her teeth. But she would write out little notes asking for what she needed. She'd say things like, PK, help me with water. PK, I'm hungry. PK, can you help me get in touch with my family? And after he helped her get healthy again, he took her to the airport so she could fly back to Austria. By this point, she knew all about PK and Lotta's story. And PK never, ever would have thought to ask her for anything. He was just being a good person, a good citizen, helping a woman who needed help in a foreign country. She wanted to repay him somehow.
So when she came to Vienna, she sent me a ticket, train ticket from Istanbul. When I opened in Tabriz Post Restaurant, they're very thick, the parcel I got. When I opened it, oh my God, it was a ticket, train ticket, Istanbul to Vienna. And she wrote, she had written, I remember the word, where she has written, PK, my baby. I have still preserved the letter. It's so motherly affection, you know. And oh, I cry every time I read her letter now. PK, my baby, you welcome to Vienna before going to Lotta. And oh my God.
So PK finally ditched his bike. He left it in Istanbul and he took the train to Vienna, where he met up with the woman whose life he saved.
And I had a wonderful time in Vienna. She took me, she did many places, Sylvia. So nice people I met on the way, you know. It was my journey, which rightly is, I feel so honored as a human, you know, in Europe.
Yeah.
No one asked me, what is your caste in Europe? You know.
This story is filled with so many happy accidents. In Vienna, PK got to show his sketches to a gallery owner who was so impressed that he bought PK tickets to Copenhagen in Denmark and then to Gothenburg in Sweden. He took the last couple legs of his trip in relative style, at least not on a bike. And then, finally, he got to have his big reunion with Lotta. We'll get to that after a quick break.
So you get to Sweden, you have this reunion. A lot of what was it like for you to see him again after all this time?
That was so nice to meet.
So he phoned
me, actually.
Yeah, I phoned. When at the train station, the moment I came out, it was sunny weather, I remember, and anemones were blowing everywhere, smell wild flowers. I felt, my God, it's so clean, everything here. And when I was going, I was new, I'm whole new, you know, it's a paradise, I felt, you know. And someone was shouting, you know, very loudly, hello, PK, welcome to Sweden, you know, loudly. So, my God, I don't know anyone in Gothenburg station, this first bit. And I recognized it was a tourist whose portrait I had done half a year ago in Delhi, you know. And he was going to the hospital, he was a medical student, or something like that. So, it was nice, you know, I felt welcome in a very lovely, in an unknown place. And I told him that, where can I take a shower? I smell bad, before calling to Lotta. And he told me, go to the Salvation Army, was very close. And he showed me, I went inside the Salvation Army hotel. It was only 19 kroner, I remember. And I paid the money. It was sharing a room, and the attached bathroom. I mean, not attached bathroom. It was, you have to share with others. So I went to this bathroom and I was brushing my teeth. And I felt, oh, now I will take a shower and make myself clean. And then I will call to Lotha. That was my plan.
All PK wanted to do was take a shower. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. And he went into the bathroom. There's an old guy in there and they're talking. And that guy is just monopolizing the bathroom. There's no way that PK can take a shower. So he gives up on the shower and just calls Lotha.
I went to the reception each time, borrowed the telephone. I had the number. I called Lotha. And she's telling, yeah, I'm coming to pick you up. Don't worry. She told me. And she came. Oh my, I didn't take my bath. I was smelling, oh, so bad. I remember. So I was holding my both arms very close. I said, I won't come close to her because she will smell me. Bad smell. And I remember, I hold my hand like this. And when she came, I wanted to have keep distance, social distance I should have, so she can't smell me bad. I mean, bad smell. That was my impression. And I said, I know that when you meet, you have to say, oh, I'm happy to see you. I knew that. But the moment she appeared, I forgot. I cried only. And I cried.
We both cried.
Yes, she cried also. And she jumped on me. And she started kissing me. And I didn't say, I'm happy to see you. I said, sorry, I smell bad. Sorry, I smell bad only. And she's telling me, yes, but it is perfume for me, she said.
And then what was it like to be in Sweden? And how did you assimilate into Swedish culture?
I made many mistakes. I used to do mistakes and then I never give up, you know. That is my principle. I did many mistakes and the same thing. I misunderstood many things, but it's, at the end, it was successful, you know. Like applying job, for example. The man asked me in a Swedish. I had little word. I didn't know much Swedish, but I went to the employment exchange, you know, to get the job as an art teacher, for example. And he asked me, the word, it was similar, you know, I mixed up, you know. He was, the word work, he didn't use, he said sysla. So I thought he's asking me if I can whistle, you know, because there was a famous photographer from Sweden visited my village. He was working for the National Geography also. He used to whistle to the tigers and, you know, I met him before I met Charlotte. So I thought maybe Swedish people like whistle like John Lindblad. And so I mixed up interview. I said, yes, I can whistle. And I'm whistling. It was a mistake. You know, he asked me some other question I didn't understand. But I got the job. That is.
But you adjusted. I mean, yeah. Still, you know, you used your pencil and paper easily could
communicate with people.
Yeah, you can interact nicely.
So
did you guys had a second wedding in Sweden?
Yeah, we had in 1979, mm-hmm. We married because to have it on paper. So we had a little small family wedding.
Yeah.
PK got jobs teaching art, they moved to a farm, and they had two children who are now grown. The two of them say their secret to a long and happy marriage is not to keep any secrets. Seriously, to talk and talk and talk until you just can't talk anymore. And I'm just going to say it. It can't hurt if you're ordained by the stars.
So when you tell people your love story that you met, you instantly knew that this was, you know, deigned by the universe, and then you were apart, and then you biked to Europe to be with her. Are people surprised that you guys went through all of this? I mean, can people believe your love story?
Yeah, they're excited and they get actually encouraged to do things. And I think when we're telling, you know, storytelling is so fascinating because by telling our story, but it's not actually our story more, because it's spreading all around the world, and it's necessary to keep up stories. So
young generation, yeah, I feel, yeah, because the letters we are getting from all over the world, I mean, yeah, Chinese and Japanese students, and you know,
they get encouraged, and
yeah, the young, yeah, generation, I feel, mm-hmm, I can get it, yeah,
yeah, it, they I mean, nothing is impossible, you know, mm-hmm, that one should have the strength and dare to do things. Because as PK said before, doubt and fears are actually just stopping us in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Is it also nice for you guys after so long to remember the early days of your love story? That, yeah, must just be nice when you finish these talks to go back and be like, remember that day when I walked up to you and asked you to draw my portrait?
Yeah, this is really nice.
Yeah.
This episode of Committed was hosted and reported by Joe Piazza, with a very special thanks to Lada and PK Mahanandia. Supervising producer is Ramsey Yunt. The executive producers are Joe Piazza and Tyler Klang. Theme song and music by Tristan McNeil. For comments, suggestions, or to be part of the show, give us a call at 404-996-1173. That's 404-996-1173. Or send us an email at joe@committedpodcast.com. That's joe@committedpodcast.com. You can grab a copy of Joe's book, How to Be Married, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Committed is a production of iHeartRadio and produced in our studios located in Atlanta, Georgia. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.